Subsection C, take post. Subsection target, entrenched infantry. Aiming point, farmhouse corner. Concentration and distribution, spring gun 80 degrees left. Angle of sight, 3-0. Nature of charge and fuse, cordite MD number 106. Cast iron fuse. Method of ranging, right ranging. Nature of sheltering, gas. Range 1500. One round, load.
Every time I load my gun with mustard, Rouillet, I think of you sending me into the blue.
Order to shoot! Fire!
Front, October the 13th, 1918. The village of Warwick, near Wipers. Ypres to the uninitiated, with my grandfather erotically firing his 18-pound gun. He recalls a French nurse he met in hospital while getting over his second gassing in 6 months.
Give us a kiss, darling. Do you know what I think?
No, Tommy, tell me. What do you think?
The British should be fighting alongside the Germans against the French.
Gosh, yeah.
1984. Very hot out here. But green and fertile. I'm standing with my mother beside my father's grave in the war cemetery at Bajez El Bab, Tunisia. He was killed during the Second World War, 40 years ago. She's unable to cry or pray.
He's not under there. Inside, I'm just a block of ice.
Well, surely you must feel something. Try.
I got a right to sing the blues. I got a right to feel low down.
We present Under the Table by David Pownall, with Kenneth Cranham as Seth and David Calder as the storyteller. Under the Table.
He's dragging my poor heart around. Babe, all I see from me is misty.
Early morning mist over the Black Sea. The Skymaster military aircraft, christened Sacred Cow, escorted by P-38 fighters, carries Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States, towards Saki Aerodrome. 20 minutes behind him in the York transport plane, Winston Spencer Churchill, Prime Minister of the British Empire, heads towards the same destination. At the time when dawn bloodies the night, Churchill pulls a leather flying jacket close around him and looks down on the Dardanelles.
Can't this thing go a bit faster?
40 years ago, as First Lord of the Admiralty in that other war, a suicidal campaign was launched to dislodge the Turks and Germans from this spot in order to open a line of communication with our Russian allies.
Let's hope it won't be so expensive this time.
Coffee, Prime Minister.
Gallipoli. Oh, dear, dear. And the things they said about me. By then, Uncle Joe had already been in jail 6 times for sedition and robbing banks.
And where are all these planes taking Churchill and Roosevelt? Because Stalin, on the advice of his doctors, so he says, is refusing to leave the safety of the Soviet Union, a meeting vital to the world's future is to be held at Yalta in southern Russia. For Hitler is on his way out. While Churchill waits in the cold wind, clutching his hat, watching sparks fly from his cigar, President Roosevelt is lowered to the ground in his wheelchair by a special lift mechanism. A couple of time zones to the rear, May Hammer is in the cloakroom of Tew Brook Parish Hall, Liverpool, struggling to get into a pair of voluminous Union Jack drawers, preparing to lead a folk dance in honor of the goddess Mother Brown, to whom all knees must be raised. With her 3 daughters and phlegmatic spouse, she once lived in a tiny terraced house in Everton's lovely vale.
The family moved up market in 1935 because May's husband had been promoted and wished to erect a greenhouse for growing tomatoes in a non-stone-throwing district of Liverpool. May found that she could not completely adjust to her change in status. Although by sheer force of character, she inevitably became the life and soul of the party in Tewbrook, she found that it was a different party.
Oh, Mrs. Hammer, how could you? That's the flag you're wearing.
Don't think I wouldn't die for it,
she says stoutly. Later, she would don a man's suit of tails, put on a topped top hat, twirl a silver-topped cane, fill a clay pipe with dog ends from the dance floor, and sing a little defiantly.
I walked down the Strand with my gloves on my hand, and I walked back again with them off. But I haven't a shirt.
The old music hall hit, Burlington Bertie, followed by an impersonation of the American entertainer Al Jolson, doing...
Mammy, Mammy, the sun shines east, the sun shines west, but I know where the sun shines best.
Resonance of this soul-searching between high and low, rich and poor, male and female, black and white, is made all the greater by Mrs. Hammer's 15-stone beauty, which suits her role as arch-priestess of parish fun, speaking in riddles that betray all pre-war Liverpudlian's anxiety not to be over-understood.
It wouldn't be a show without punch. I'm going ashore for the loaf. We're short of nothing we've got. The rags round my arse are battering me brains out.
The meaning of much she says has been lost in the mists of the dispossessed mind. The same is true of Stalin, who with Hitler had dispossessed socialism of all its meaning, but not in order to entertain.
If you're not Irish, you must be.
The Soviet leader waits by a telephone to hear that the squadrons of his allies have arrived safely. However, he will not be at the airport to meet his guests. Stalin wants the two Western leaders to see the ruin of the land for themselves, the wholesale destruction left behind by the retreating invaders.
My God, what a mess has been made of this place. Certainly makes me feel more bloodthirsty.
Barbarians. Wouldn't Bach and Beethoven be ashamed of them?
This journey is taking place in February 1945 with the cold wind whistling over the sea from the snowbound Caucasus. That chill airstream flows west across a crucified continent to where, snug in his cubbyhole office on Liverpool's waterfront, May Hammer's half-her-weight husband, Seth, listens to a roll call read out by Bags, his crippled warehouse clerk.
Artemis, Bella, Circe, Diana, Esther, Gloriana, Freya, Helen, Iris, Juno, HMS Warrington, the Arctic Star. All in the pool waiting. Bring to mind those bad old days, boss, when most of them would have gone to the bottom.
Yeah, better off then. Didn't have to store the cargoes.
He'd rather work than be at home any day, Mr. Hammer.
The trouble with you is you're like the man who shat himself. You know all about it.
Sweating again, boss.
You know my ailment, Bags? The recurring malaria I got in the land between the two rivers.
Do I have to spell it out again, Mr. Hammer? You can get dressed.
Keeps slipping my mind, Doctor.
If you carry on in this way, cirrhosis of the liver is a strong possibility.
Can't be worse than how I feel now. What symptoms should I look out for?
Jaundice. You've already got a sallow look. Black, sticky, evil-smelling motions. Your face and palms red. Projectile vomiting of blood. It's quite impressive when it happens. I had someone in here, no names, no pack drill, who shot a mouthful from one side of the room to the other. Splat. All over the wall.
My grandfather walks from the surgery, goes straight to the Black Lion via the Lamb and Flag to contemplate this danger. Afterwards, at home, in a hide leather armchair dotted with cigarette burns, he sits asleep, dreaming that he's won the Tossing the Blood event at the Scotland Road Highland Games.
My husband? What a film star! He's got one leg in the grave, but he keeps jumping out again.
Night after peril-filled night, Grandfather has spent in his armchair, railing against the German Air Force, and refusing to take refuge under the stairs. Bottles at his feet, Capstan full strength burning between his long, elegant, nicotine-stained fingers, he's poured contempt upon Goering's bomb aimers for their failure to strike him dead.
couldn't punch a buggering hole in a wet echo.
The name of Liverpool's best-loved evening paper.
Ah! Ow!
During his doze, another cigarette has burnt down to his fingers. Cursing, he flicks into the fire, his bottle-end glasses magnifying blue, ball-bearing eyes, and the danger is past.
The first shell has fallen on the and they have to listen to the crackle of machine gun fire.
Oh, shut up, will you? I can hardly hear.
But is this the news? Perhaps the husband is right to sleep through, because apparently, by common agreement, the real news in war is never told. The conference at Yalta cannot even be mentioned. Therefore, the question is begged. In what mind, where, and how is it really happening?
But we can guess, and none of our...
Huh. Now, everything points to this nightmare... 10 Turkish... I know where I can get it this time.
One good thing about
it. We don't want to hear about your foreign intercourse.
All I want has projectiles you can hang your hat on.
Now you've made me drop a stitch.
In repose, there is something vaguely Roman about his features. Seth's seamy grandeur is free of any softness or sentimentality. Like the beautiful blurred features on the Turin shroud, his visage could have been made up from all the war-beaten human faces in history, superimposed one upon the other.
Hey! I was listening to that.
Next lot will be just the same.
You were having another nightmare?
Now now's the nightmare, waking up here with you.
I've always said you're snotty but civil.
My arm's gone dead.
Rub it with a hot brick.
And what arm does none wouldn't make much difference to you.
Don't talk like that. The boy's under the table. He can hear everything.
Lives in a world of his own, that one.
You can blame him.
Oh, he's thick.
True, O King, but I'm learning.
He's not thick. He can read, which is more than you can at the moment.
I can read.
But you can't hold the paper straight. Why don't you make the time to play with him? Go out with him now and then.
They won't let kids in the pub. Whenever he's been out with me, he's ended up sitting in a cold doorstep with a bottle of pop and a bag of crisps.
Then take him into the garden. Let him help in the greenhouse.
You clumsy. Break things.
What's the use? I'll put your dinner on the table.
Can't face it.
If you've got a spit in the fire, at least try and hit it.
Quack says I mustn't bend too much.
I lift the edge of the tablecloth and watch as my grandfather peers at the mess he's made in the polished hearth. Spitting is how he marks out the last of his domestic freedom. Everything in this room is kept spotless, scrubbed, clean, and in its proper place, except his mouth.
I know you're looking, German spy. What are you doing under there? Tossing off?
I'm only 7, Grandad. The dinner is brought from the kitchen. Every night my grandmother has to plead with him to eat. This time she serves delicately flavoured honeycomb tripe stewed in milk with onions, very gentle on the stomach.
Don't want it.
Seth, you have to eat.
Can't cope with salad food at the moment. Give it to the cat.
She won't eat tripe.
Well, let the boy have it then. He'll eat anything. Won't you?
Leave the lad alone.
Well, you have to think about his food. It's an insult to a man with half a stomach.
The whereabouts of the other half is a family mystery. But my gran believes that it may be in the possession of Rouillet, the French nurse who turned him inside out in 1917.
Have you ever thought what the last 5 years have been like for me? All I've done is unload ships carrying food I can't eat. Do you hear that down there, hungry Horace?
You should be glad the boy's got such a good appetite. There's millionaires who'd give everything they've got for it.
If you're only feeding up for the army, they'll have him soon enough.
Don't be so wicked. I go down on my bended knees every night to pray that never happens.
It will.
Oh, shut up and go to bed, you miserable bugger.
My arm's coming back to life. Don't I tingle? Why is it every time I come home, bugger lugs hides under the table?
I'm scared of you. If I had any sense, I'd join him.
You wouldn't fit. Hey, you down there. Only mice live under tables looking for crumbs.
My gran was wrong. I wasn't scared. I was under the table to listen in case he came out with whether my father was definitely dead or alive, one or the other. I needed to know that. Because my grandfather was always drunk, he was most likely to let slip the truth.
Oh, God, not visitors now.
I'll get it.
I don't want anyone here with you like this. Please, Seth, try to behave.
It'll be the gang I invited home from the pub.
It's him. He's come back. When I open the door, he'll be standing there. His face will be sunburned. Some kind Arabs found him and took care of him at an oasis.
Hello, Rusty, you'll say. Let's dance.
Good evening. I was about to give up and go away.
I was upstairs.
I thought I might have a word with the boys.
I'll get me, Mum.
Who is it?
Mr. Hunt.
Bring the shot in here.
Take Mr. Hunt into the lounge, please.
We all have our crosses to bear.
Be with you in a minute. Look after Mr. Hunt, Rusty.
I know it's inconvenient, but I am extremely concerned. Having thought about it and sought some guidance, I knew I had to come.
My mum will be here in a minute.
I'm afraid I was walking past the Lamb and Flag an hour ago when your father made his exit. Since then, I haven't been able to stop thinking about you, your sons, and your predicament.
I'm going in there.
You're not. The man isn't interested in you. He's come to see the boys.
I'm a boy at heart.
Don't go in there.
Good evening, sir. May blessings rain down on your head like coconuts.
Good evening, Mr. Hammer. How are we?
We's all right. Far too well to need a visit from you.
Would it be possible for me to have a word with the children, please?
John's asleep.
The other one's hiding in his den. Go and drag him out, Rusty.
That won't be necessary. With your permission, I'll go and talk to him.
You'll have to get down on your hands and knees, but you're used to that. As you're here, why don't we have a chat, man to man? If you've got something to say in this house, you should say it to me.
Perhaps it would be better if you told the boy I'd come to see him. I wouldn't want him frightened.
Him frightening you? No child of my blood is frightened of a buggering priest.
Dad,
we breed men in this house, not dancing partners.
Take no notice, Mr.
You'd better take notice. He's in my house. No respect for your religion.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm going to go to church.
That's not quite so. When your
that
son
doesn't
is not...
count. All on the spur of the moment. Have some rum.
It seemed to count then, Mr. Hammer.
30 years ago, I left behind enemy lines in thick fog with 10 lame horses and a load of frozen hay. No one thought, where's he gone? Just dropped me off the list of the living and forgot I'd ever existed. The same will happen to my son-in-law, no matter what the women say. But faster than most, they'll forget about useless articles like you.
Though it saddens me greatly, I won't even try to argue with all that, Mr. Hammer.
You really bloody can't. My father was a lay preacher, carried his Bible everywhere, even to work. He was a gravedigger at Sefton Park.
Really?
Cut the sod for one of my sisters, and he buried his own wife, my mother.
That must have been a very painful experience for you.
Painful? Oh, yes, it was. He read a few words over it from the good book, patted her down with his shovel, then went off with Rosie, the charwoman from the cemetery office. You have a talk, cheer yourself up.
No, thank you.
Don't sulk. Life's too short. Do you know what I've got in our coaching?
Mum, I can't manage.
Your father and I are getting on very well, aren't we? So, tell me. What's this you've got in the coal shed, Mr. Hammer?
A crucifixion I carved years ago out of a single piece of oak.
How very interesting.
What's going on here? What am I thinking about? I'm drinking with the Cardinal Archbishop of Chewbrook. I've given him a glass the size of a thimble.
I'll have to go and find your mum, Mr. Hunt.
I'll be perfectly happy here. There's no reason why your father and I shouldn't get on, is there?
No reason at all. We're both not Catholics.
Do you still keep up with your sculpture? It must be a fascinating hobby. Perhaps you could do something for our church.
Why don't you shut your mouth? Let us see who you are.
Dad!
Stupid tart.
How dare you? Have you no shame? Your own daughter, a war widow with 2 young children, trying to live with a grief, and all you do is insult her. Hasn't there been enough suffering in this house without you making it worse? Intoxicated every day? Your poor wife cannot hold her head up in the streets.
That's fine talk. Listen, there's things you can't imagine. And because you're only half a man, I can't be bothered to tell them to you.
Why am I only half a man?
Because you only want half the truth.
I love the whole truth. Indeed. I love it more than life itself.
War and what it does to you is the old truth. That's why it takes men to fight it and the devil to understand it.
Pub talk, Mr. Hammer. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to see if I can have a word with that child.
Keep your hands off his knee. No, he'd let you. Maybe he's just stay here with me. This is the best room for the best people. Hold on. I'll get you a bigger glass to go with your head.
Thank you.
Big Three's Yalta Conference got off to a slightly better start than Seth Synod. Held in the drafted ballroom of the Livadia Summer Palace, once the holiday home of the Tsar, amenities have suffered because German troops looted everything that they could lay their hands on, even down to taps and doorknobs, many of which have not been replaced. Senior diplomats are opening doors with dinner knives and having to urinate out of bedroom windows. And it's cold. But not as cold as outside. Fatigued and disorientated by their long journey, feeling the effect of Stalin's heavy-handed liquid hospitality, both Roosevelt and Churchill are having moments when they wonder, is this really happening?
In the not-too-distant past, the Poles were happy enough to invade Russia when it suited them. And every time we're invaded from the west, be it French, German, they come through Poland.
I can't imagine anyone planning to invade Russia when this war's over.
How can I take that for granted?
Have they been able to do anything about giving us more heat here?
It's still cold? I don't feel it myself.
Well, the temperature has dropped a lot, Joe, and the president must be kept warm.
I gave orders to put everything on maximum. They said that the equipment is already at full stretch.
Could we go to a smaller room that would be easier to keep warm?
You want the three men who rule the world to meet in a broom cupboard?
We really can't stay here, Joe. It's too big to heat.
You expect too much of us. This is not the West. Our country has been nearly destroyed. We suffer, and we suffer, but we don't complain.
Please, don't be offended. I am very concerned for the president's health. Why don't we wander around and look for somewhere a little bit warmer? Anywhere will do.
Are you against that idea, Joe? I have to admit that I am feeling the chill.
I am insulted, naturally. But what the hell? Everything I hear about the wonders of American technology and your wheelchair needs oiling.
I'd feel easier if I knew you could accept that no one's going to be in a position to threaten your security. This mess is going to take 20 years to clear up.
Yeah, and after 20 years? Also, you must remember, Slavic peoples are not like Germans, British, Americans. They don't like war. I don't want to ask them to fight again.
Where do you get the impression that we like war?
The movies? John Wayne, Gary Cooper. wait. We could try the games room. I've got the billiard table working. Darts for Winston.
Too distracting. We must have a place where we can shut ourselves off and get down to work quickly. Hell, I'm not even sure that we won't have to start all over. Have we got anywhere so far? Perhaps we three old guys should begin again at the beginning.
Down corridors, peering into antechambers, vestibules, living, drawing rooms, they search through the broken palace, looking for somewhere to settle, squabbling gently.
I'm sure we've been past here before. Which turning did we take last time? Right or left?
Under an arch between the news that was and the news that wasn't, past the big three, into a very personal kind of history.
At least, there's a handle. Poke your head in, sir.
Tomatoes, I love tomatoes.
Don't come in.
This will do.
No! Any time for myself. Wife's giving me hell. Daughter's threatening to leave home. Vicky's reporting me to welfare. Doctors condemn me to death.
Be a good chap. Take the front end of the wheelchair so we can manage it down the step, will you?
I shouldn't bend too much.
Get on with it, man.
Shut up.
Thank God for some warmth. Are you comfortable, Mr. President?
I'm not sure about that underlying smell, but I suppose I can live with it.
Dried blood.
I got it off a friend.
We'll come to thrash out the post-war partition of Europe.
In my greenhouse?
Needn't take long.
Tell me, sir, to create the right conditions for a permanent peace among the nations, what would you do? It would help if an ordinary citizen like yourself would open his heart and tell us what he really thinks.
I'm not ordinary. What's ordinary? I don't know what ordinary is.
And every man figures it. The man in the street, he on the Clapham omnibus. We need to understand.
Where do you think you are? And while we're at it, I'm a man who hasn't been understood since 1918.
A magical year. 1918 is 1 and 9 and 1 and 8, which adds up to 19. 19 is 1 and 9, which adds up to 10. Is not 1945 1 and 9 and 4 and 5 also adding up to 19, which is 1 plus 9, producing the same sacred 10? So, disharmony is promised again.
Man will destroy himself, but who'll be the bin man?
Yes, hello. Oh, not much chance of that. Hold on. The Argo is in Trafalgar with canned goods, tea and Marge, boss. The minister's asking if we got room for 800 tons extra.
All the room in the world.
But we haven't. The safety inspectors will be on to us.
Jam everything in up to the ceiling. Make the floors bend and the walls bold. You care.
Boss, we got the Northern Rock and the Bolivar docking tomorrow.
Invite them round. We can take anything they throw at us. It's 12 o'clock. Time for your dinner and my lunch.
Hey, Mr. Leslie's been snooping round. Don't go in the tug and forelock. And your wife rang up.
She can't have done. The woman doesn't know how to use the phone.
She said your boiler in the greenhouse is overeaten and she doesn't know how to turn it off. Said she's scared it'll blow up.
Hey, send the stuff over. Oh, God knows where we're going to put it.
While the docks and warehouses of Liverpool fill to danger point, and the big three perspire plentifully amongst Seth's tomatoes, sweating scientists cram an entire universe into a container at Alamogordo American Air Force Base, New Mexico, and Adolf Hitler finds room in his heaving brain to contemplate suicide. Steph hears this latter news straight from the Fuhrer's mouth while freeing the greenhouse boiler's rusted-up safety valve.
Gentlemen, I have written my last political testament. You are the only people on Earth whose editorial opinion I respect. Would you cast an eye over the manuscript for me?
I'm not sure we've got time to dally.
When communism has wrecked the future world, I want people to read this little book and see how right I was.
Before you go, tell me how you got those camps of yours to be so efficient.
Henry Ford.
I can't let that pass.
Pass it has. Death is a motor car on an assembly line going backwards.
If you gents don't mind, my dinner's waiting.
Leave the boy with us. She might learn something.
On your own head, be it. Don't expect too much.
After this war, two questions will arise. Should leaders be given even the most trifling freedom to do their personal will? And why should people want to be governed at all?
Do you know how tomatoes make love, my son? When they're in flower, someone taps them with a cane.
I said, keep your eye on him for 5 minutes while I went to the shop. What'd you leave him in the greenhouse for? That place isn't safe.
I thought he'd like to stay there, play for a while.
When you tidy it up, it gets full of mice and they come into the house.
It's not full of mice now.
I managed to get you a piece of fin and haddock for your dinner. I've poached it with an egg on top. Is there any point in putting it on the table or shall I throw it straight into the bin?
I'll have a go, but I'm making no promises.
I've made myself a new dress for the dance. Do you like it?
Oh, yes. It's lovely.
Where's the queer fella?
Your father's left him in the greenhouse.
Rusty peers across the garden. The dirty, bemossed greenhouse glass is steamed up. Shapes behind could be plants or a boy. She puts a new dress on a hanger, hooks it on the picture rail, then goes upstairs to bath the baby she was 4 months pregnant with when the news she was never able to believe came from North Africa. To the other women of the family, superstitious and miracle-conscious as they are, this baby, when born, was its own father reincarnated. It's treated with a respect that borders on veneration. Every move it makes, every sound, has several meanings, not the least of which is that Rusty's younger son is her husband, and the boy under the table's little brother is his father. But Rusty refuses to fall into the trap set by this family myth. If she did, it would mean that she accepted what the army told her, that Jack, her husband, her dancing partner for life, had been blown to smithereens on the side of a muddy road in Tunisia.
They never found him.
There was nothing to find.
Are you sure all the Czechoslovakians, Yugoslavians, Romanians, Bulgarians, Hungarians, Estonians, Lithuanians, Latvians, not to mention the Poles, want to be communists?
Has anyone heard them saying they don't?
And God help them, if they did. Let's say you promise free and democratic elections in all the countries liberated by Soviet forces.
I promise. On my mother's grave.
Is she dead? What will the post-war Polish government look like, exactly?
People might say I'm a dictator, but I couldn't bring myself to discuss that without the Poles being present.
It was because of the Nazi invasion of Poland that we entered the war. We cannot, therefore, agree to anything that denies her complete democratic freedom.
What do you say, Joe?
That's guaranteed.
I've got to be sure that the people of Eastern Europe aren't merely exchanging one tyranny for another.
Don't be so melodramatic. Frankly, this is what we're here to talk about.
I know what he means.
What do you mean?
The crushing of legitimate opposition by undemocratic methods, the use of terror, secret police, mass deportations, imprisonments and executions without trial.
Even though it's an internal matter, I'll give you a personal promise, Franklin. As soon as it's practical, we'll be much gentler with everybody.
That's good enough for me. How can Poland be an internal matter to Russia?
The same way as India is to Britain.
Joe, I'd like you to understand something. The U.S. doesn't like empires. Anyone's empires. It's not in our tradition at all. And we're not in the business of either making or sustaining empires for other people. Okay, Winston? Now let's move on, shall we? A framework for disarmament.
Yes. I'd like to hear what promises Joe's going to make about that.
It's getting hot again. Give that valve another tap, will you, Sonny?
Sorted yourselves out?
Well, this will take more time than we thought.
I'm looking for that boy I brought in here.
He doesn't say much.
Father was killed 2 years ago. No one will tell him straight except the kids in the street.
Now, the street is where the truth lives.
But perhaps he's trying to work out who to believe, just as we are.
I reckon he knows.
And your part in this?
His own mother, my eldest daughter, just won't accept the truth. If I tell him one thing and she another, who's he got to believe, eh?
How old is the little chap?
7.
Well, then you haven't a chance, I agree. His mother rules anything close to the heart.
And what if I did tell him? In his eyes, I'd be reduced to the level of the kids in the street. We've been walking on eggs for a long time in our house. There's no way to live.
What kind of future are we giving our young people if we lie to them about the simplest things?
Easily said, but my daughter won't have it. No matter what proofs put in front of her, she says her husband's alive.
The concealment of death isn't healthy. Let her heart break, then let it heal. It will end up stronger. And then next time she loses her husband, it won't be so painful.
But she got it all in black and white. Telegrams, letters of condolence, her own letters returned by the army, rubber-stamped, item could not be delivered, addressee reported deceased. But she keeps on writing, and they keep on sending them back.
Dear Jack, it's exactly 2 years to the day since I last heard. Whoever's looking after you or keeping you a prisoner must be very tight not to let you have a few sheets of writing paper.
Emma, this must be laid at your door. A way could have been found to establish the unpalatable fact with your daughter. Sounds to me as though you let things slide very badly.
Your daughter seems to have been given all the evidence she needs to prove her husband's dead, so she must have her own reasons to behave as if he's not. It may be a wrong reason or a crazy reason, but it will be a reason. Any idea what that might be, Mr. Hammer?
Now you're asking.
Yes, I am asking.
I don't know.
If any daughter of mine ended up not being able to face the truth, I want to know why.
Oh, you're bang on time.
It's over to be.
Just a minute. Jack, when you meet me, Dad,
I don't want you to be afraid of him.
I won't be.
But I do want you to remember everything he's been through. Think about your own dad and what happened to him in the war.
Oh.
Mine survived, but only just.
Come on, Rusty, let's get on with it.
Don't be in too much of a hurry. He knows it's you at the door. He's putting a tie on in your honour.
Now you've got me on it. You think he'll like me?
He doesn't really like anybody, so you won't feel left out.
This is getting worse by the minute.
Stand up to him, Jack. But in a nice way.
Is that what you do?
Just go over what you're going to say to him.
Sir, I love your daughter and I want to marry her.
He'll try to flummox you.
Flummox me? Why?
He does that. He likes flummoxing people. But don't let him do it to you. And Jack.
Yeah?
Don't smile too much. He doesn't like that.
Sir, you miserable old bugger. I love your daughter very much and I want to marry her.
Why do you love her so very much?
Because she can do the tango.
Come in if you're coming in. It's not that flaming door. There's a gale blowing through here.
Good luck. His bark's only as bad as his bite.
Thanks.
I love you.
How do you do, sir?
Your hand's clammy. Well, park your ass. You're overcrowding my eyesight.
Thank you, sir.
You're the one who's here to do the talking, so get on with it.
Sir, I love her daughter and I want to marry you.
Have another go.
Sir, I love your daughter and I want to marry you.
Right, we've got that out of the way. Now, nice lad, I've got a few questions you'll have to answer. What does your father do?
He's dead.
What did he die of?
He was killed in the last war.
So was I, near enough. What did your mother do?
She's a nurse in America.
America? What's she doing over there?
She went at the end of the war when I was 3.
How long were you in Yankee land?
Oh, I never went. She left me here.
Why did she do that?
The man she married didn't like other men's children.
Brought up in a home, were you?
No, my uncle and auntie looked after me.
Well, what did your own kids think about that?
They're my father's brother and sister.
That's cosy. What did your uncle do?
Ironmonger's shop in Rice Lane.
Protestant or Catholic?
Oh, my uncle Charlie serves anybody.
You were in such a hurry because my daughter's expecting.
No.
But she will be. Hey. Trouble is, gentlemen, she keeps on talking about him as if he's going to come back.
But go out and find her another husband. Get another man between her legs. That'll make her think differently.
Hey, steady on. Besides, any fella asks her, I guess, a fleeing, is he?
It's up to you to guide and help your daughter until she comes to terms with reality. Everyone has to adjust to new situations. I'm getting tired again, Winston. Very sleepy.
You can't brush me under the carpet. If there wasn't a war, this wouldn't have happened. George is the boy for me. Give us all a chance of getting back on an even keel. If he hears the truth from you, the big three, he'll make his mother understand. Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, you know.
Hammer, we can't spend valuable time on specific cases like this. It'll take another generation before people can completely believe what's happened to them in this war.
Oh, come on, Winston. Do good when you have the chance. It shouldn't take long to convince the child. Let's get him in here and shout, "Your dad's dead," all together.
On our agenda, your grandson will be item 115.
Thank you.
Allah illi ala business. Now, can we get on? Reparation.
I have estimates that Germany's pre-war wealth was $125 billion, reduced by the cost of the conflict to $75 billion. My people have calculated that 30% of a highly industrialized country's wealth can be siphoned off in reparations without inflicting gross hardship on the population. That puts $20 billion into the pot for us to share out three ways.
I must have half.
Half? We're short of money as well, you know.
Half is what I need to rebuild the Soviet Union from its ashes, and half is what I must have.
It's him. It's him. And he is me with me hair and curls. Oh.
It's Rusty, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm Trevor. Friend of Jack's? I promised him I'd call. I'm sorry it's taken so long for me to come, but it's the first real leave I've had.
Who is it? Friend of Jack's! Come in! Come in!
Thanks. He always talked about you.
He mentions you in his letters.
We spent a lot of time together. Joined up on the same day. I recognised you straight away.
God bless you. I'm coming to the best room. Are you hungry?
No, thank you. Not right now.
Plump the cushions for Trevor. Come and be comfortable, son. Sit down and tell us all you can.
You told me all about the Joanna and the parties. You in top hat and tails and ticking off Al Johnson.
We still do that, don't we, Dusty? And Burlington Bertie. And Bert, Bert, I haven't a shit.
I've been going over and over in my mind what I could say. First, he was my best mate. Took me a long time to... He didn't know anything about it, love. Honestly.
About what? Where have you come from, son?
Warrington.
That's a long way.
He'll have to be careful not to miss his last...
A friend brought me over on the back of his motorbike.
I think I'll get on with my sewing.
No.
You mustn't keep your friend waiting.
No, he's gone for a walk for an hour.
Rusty, this young man's come all the way from Warrington to see you. Make him a cup of tea, will you?
I'm in the middle of something. I've only got half a pattern for it. I'm having to make the rest.
Make the lad a cup of tea! Oh, sorry you had to go through that, son. See, all we got was this telegram, missing in action, and we've heard nothing since.
Had to get anything right. He was killed outright. How they can do things like that? Some bloody death waller who couldn't care less. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed it all.
No, you didn't.
I should have trodden more carefully, got to know the situation before saying anything. All this time, keeping up such a pretense. He wouldn't have wanted her to do that.
With my daughter, it'll take longer than most. Jack was the light of her life.
I know that. They were a couple of lovebirds. Oh, I brought something for his kid.
Kids?
I forgot.
One was posthumous.
Posthumous? You mean it was born after you'd been told he was missing?
We'll get over it.
I better leave it here with you.
Leaving my grandmother caught out in her protective lie, the bearer of such old bad news leaves feeling as though his friend had died a second time. Confused and upset, Trevor wanders the streets, not knowing what to do with himself for the rest of the hour he'd set aside for this encounter. Then, not wanting to be alone, he goes into a nearby public house.
Hello there, soldier.
Sitting in the corner of the public bar, cigarette in one hand, stout in the other, is a long-headed, somewhat emaciated sage who speaks kindly to him.
What are you having then, soldier?
Oh, that's all right. I can't buy one back, so I'll get me on.
Suit yourself. Coldstream Guards, eh? 6 footers. Die with their boots clean.
All the way. North Africa to Germany.
Do you remember a tall, dark, blunt sergeant who fancied himself as a dancer?
Jack, who never came back.
We're going to have to think about leaving, Mum.
Don't say that.
My dad isn't fit to live with.
Give him another chance. I'll talk to him again. I'll be very firm this time. Fill that pan up with cold.
Talking won't help.
What else can I do?
Why should I have to sit here and listen to him going on about what he is in the pub?
He doesn't understand your hope, love.
Making up stories like that. What gets into him? It's as if he wants us never to be happy.
No, love, it's not that. His brain's softening all the time. He doesn't know his arse from his elbow. Pass me the salt, will you?
Then how does he hold down his job?
I think people help him on the sly. It won't be long before the firm will have to get rid of him.
What? With Uncle Les on the board of directors? And half the family working there?
Never. They tipped me the wink. I don't know what we'll do when it happens. He'll disintegrate. That lad from Warrington left a present for the boys.
That's not all he left. A liar.
Nothing much. Only a drawing Jack did. Of an Arab riding a camel.
That'll be a message for me.
Of course it will. It's very good, very lifelike. But he couldn't get the camel's feet in before the bottom of the paper.
A week later, responding to desperate notes from their mother, Rusty's two sisters have come to help persuade her not to leave. After a kitchen discussion of Seth's crimes, the four women move into the living room, smoking furiously, their eyes hard and bitter on their father as he sits slumped in his pockmarked chair, also screening himself with smoke. Clouds of tobacco fume fill the room. The air swirls, acrid, choking, thick like a battlefield. From beneath a table comes a cough.
It's time that one was in bed.
He's staying up. He wants to see his auntie.
He won't see much of him from under there.
He'd come out if you weren't around.
Don't talk to your father like that.
Oh, for God's sake.
You must treat your father with respect.
Save your breath. I don't know what it means anymore. I'm getting out of here.
In an eerie, prefigured silence, Seth's three daughters sit and watch as their father painfully pulls himself out of his chair. Once he was master in this house, and of himself, his word was law. They watch him enter the house of glass. A match flares as he lights a cigarette. Then darkness, except for one red dwarf star in his hand. They know his day has passed. Pity moves them.
Peace.
Cradling a cluster of tomatoes in his beautiful, sensitive hands, he smells them.
From seed, as it is.
Full of memories of the first green shoots, he tends the boiler. For a moment he stares into the heart of the furnace, does not spit into it, feeds the inferno, then sits brooding, eyes on the moving square of scarlet flame, as if it were the Big Bang held forever in a frame.
Stupid bitch won't even believe an eyewitness.
For God's sake, have a lot now.
My family are driving me up the wall, sir.
When her sisters have left, Rusty goes to bed.
Night, Mum.
Good night, love. Another day over and not much learnt.
An impulse takes May out into the cool summer night. Standing thigh deep amongst dahlias, she peers into the greenhouse. Steph is sitting bolt upright on a wooden Guinness crate, asleep, open-mouthed, garlanded with moon-silvered love apples, a young smile on his face. One hand absently kneading his genitals.
Yes, we know what you're dreaming about, you dirty sod.
But she's wrong. 1 year before the Great War, she worked opposite the Empire Theatre in Lime Street. He sees himself again as he walks up and down the pavement, rubbing shoulders with young men in top hats and tails, as he plucks up courage to buy roses over her counter, then return them to her with a flourish.
Brought them for you, Bright Eyes. I got tickets for the Royal Stores tomorrow night.
I have to see.
Oh, bliss. Her own stage door Johnny, her own Burlington Bertie at last. But now, unlike that night of animal magic when her smile said yes, May turns her back on the sight of him. Full of anger, confusion and regrets, she re-enters the house. To calm her mind before she goes to bed, she mops the kitchen floor, prepares a potato pie for the next day, pins the best room curtain straighter, polishes the walnut veneer sideboard, then locks up.
The front. The side. That back. That wretch.
Lying in bed with the door ajar, Rusty has listened to all this late-night restlessness and knows the signs. As her mother reaches the top of the stairs, she goes out and helps unlace her corsets.
Oh, oh, that's better. They were cutting me in half.
You should leave him, Ma.
I have. Asleep in the greenhouse.
At sunrise, Seth is wakened by the birds, stiff and cold because the boiler's gone out. Lighting his first capstan full strength of the day, he leaves the greenhouse, crosses the dew-drenched garden, and tries the back door. Finding it locked, he approaches the French doors, but fails again to gain entry. However, he can unbolt the side door. This brings him to the front door and the electric bell. Savagely, he presses and holds his thumb on it. It's 5:10 in the morning.
Come in. It's him. It's him. I understood your drawing, sweetheart. The camel is long-lasting love. The hump is all the happiness stored up for us. You left out the hooves because they're cloven like the devil's. Oh, Jack, at last.
Oh, it's you.
Your brother locked me out. I had to spend the night in the greenhouse.
Come in. Camel's feet.
He was there. The lad saw him die.
I set the fly with my lie. I saw him die.
What other proof do you want?
He was making it up to please you.
Cry, stop. What do you take me for?
Oh, don't ask. This isn't getting us anywhere, Dad. I'll have to see if I can find somewhere else to live.
Faced with his daughter's obstinate self-inflicted blindness and the fear that she will actually leave this time, Seth decides upon a policy of being nicer to his older, less reverberating grandson, persuading him to come out from under the table and help pick a few tomatoes.
If you've quite finished cleaning out your pipes, Hammer, we'd like to get on.
There's a mustard gas there. Two lots the Bosch gave me. Never been the same since. We'll be sure to have a word with the boys soon. It's getting urgent.
If we get round to it. But we've still much to decide on post-war Europe.
Never mind post-war Europe. What about post-war our house? What do you care? When have you ever bloody cared?
So what do you think of Hitler's final testament, Winston? The ravings of a criminal lunatic.
May I hear your opinions of my work now?
Your mind, Herr Hitler, is diseased. Your Nazi vision, a nightmare.
Thank you. I apologize for referring to you in the text as a Jew-ridden half-American drunkard. I may take it out. And you, Comrade Stalin, what did you think of my work?
Swept me along, comrade. By the time I got to the last page, I was in an embarrassing position on your side.
These people laugh when their asses are on fire.
The priest from the Red King of Moscow. Once my ally, now my enemy. Always ambiguous. I accept your plaudits for what they are.
Adolf, your skull will stand on my desk as an ashtray.
Could someone open a window?
Certainly. They are stuck fast, painted over, I'm afraid. I'll open the door. Don't just sit there, though. Fan him.
Sorry to be such a nuisance. Better get item 115 on the agenda in here pronto.
I must wait. Let's deal with him later. If you're getting tired again, we can adjourn for a while.
Winston, I think my next adjournment is going to be a long one. When you haven't got much time, the young and the truth have to come first.
Cap or stand up, great boy. Stop fidgeting and picking your nose. Pin your ears back.
Sonny, perhaps I'm the best person to give you this news straight, because the journey your father took is one I'm setting out on shortly. I don't think you've got to choose between believing your daddy is dead or alive. If you hold him in mind, he's around somewhere, like most fathers. And what you don't know about him, you can make up as you go along. Come closer. Listen. Winston's a bit old-fashioned, but he's an honorable, kind man and a 19th-century cowboy cutaway.
Don't worry. I'll look after him.
And Winston. Joe's a regular guy at heart. Give him a break. He's got plenty of problems, haven't you? Help each other.
I know you're hard up, Winston, but can you spare a couple of coins to put on his eyes?
Don't go, frankly, I beg you. Not with so many things left up in the air. Oh, a lamentation. Where are we now? Who is going to hold us all together?
Well, Adolf, you got your break. I got mine.
I can't believe my luck. If Roosevelt dead, I can still win the war.
You want to know what luck is, son? I gave your daddy a ring once, and he left it behind in the dance hall cloakroom. He said he'd never have a moment's luck until he got it back. He never has.
Seth, if you drive Rusty and the kids out of here, I'm going with them.
I'm not driving them out. I'm giving them a home. I'll fed them, but clothes
on their backs. Don't dictate that. Oh, Rusty works for her keep. And we have her war widow's pension, which I collect for her. She won't, because she says she's not a widow. Work that one out. That's more than half what comes into this house. You earn five times what you give me to manage on. The rest goes on your booze.
That's some entertainment. She's a lot worse than me. Do I raise my hand to him? Do I never?
You haven't got the strength. And if you did, I'd flatten you. Anyhow, there it is. If they go, I go.
You won't be able to manage.
Then we'll starve.
Get on with it, then.
I would rather starve than live here all by myself with you. I mean it, Steph.
I'm not going to stop her going.
Talk to her.
I listen to a word I say.
Tell her you're going to change.
To what?
Tell her you'll stop drinking. Tell her you can't handle it anymore. Tell her you never could.
I'm not that terrible, am I?
Every time you come through that door, you cast a cloud. Promise Rusty you'll stop boozing. Promise her you'll stand in as a father to her boy as much as you can. Promise her you'll act like a decent man. Tell her anything you like, but keep her from going.
I don't know what all the fuss is about.
You've been told on enough. And if you don't want to do anything about it, that's up to you.
Christ. Son, you under there. Orders from above me. We're going to have to get closer together.
Not likely, Grandad.
Otherwise, I'm sunk. We're both sunk. There's nothing for it. We'll just have to be friends. Hey! Come back here! Who's a pretty boy, then? Whose granddad is kissing him all the time?
Careful you don't drop him, Dad.
I'm dandling him, and I'm kissing him.
He doesn't like having smoke blown in his face.
Everything is going to be different. What a perfect child. Jack stamped all over him. We'll always be good mates, me and him.
You're an open book, Dad.
Don't leave, Rusty.
I left here a long time ago.
After Roosevelt's death, his place at the conference is taken by the new president, Harry S. Truman. The S doesn't stand for anything. It's just an S his parents gave him so he could call himself something he fancied in later life. I suppose once you've got a name like True Man, the rest can be taken light-heartedly.
Shite!
Was it me boiling?
As a controlled experiment, we tied the first atomic bomb to a post in the New Mexico desert, triggering it by remote control. Those Christians among the nearby Mescalero Apache Reservation Indians thought it was the end of the world. The rest thought it was the Great Spirit finally cracking up. Only countable casualties were a few lizards.
The equivalent of 20,000 tons of TNT make a crater big enough to get Burke and Eddie.
The blast of this formidable weapon was colossal, turning the sands of the desert into glass.
Boy, listen to me. Because America profits so much from the war, they feel guilty. To atone, they bombed themselves. And now, tell me about this weapon, Mr. President. Who will you use it against?
Depends.
I think the Soviet Union will have to attack Japan.
God damn it. All you're doing is inviting yourself to a turkey shoot. Once we drop that bomb...
Shooting turkeys, fish in a barrel, sitting ducks, I like.
Cover your faces for 5 minutes, gents. Have to dose the plants for spotted wilt, double streak, cucumber mosaic, and stem rot. One of my brother-in-laws, who works for me at the warehouse, was out in China during the Great War, and he always said it's the best place he's ever been. He'd like to go and live there because they're so cruel and honest about it. Mr. Les, another brother-in-law who's boss of my company, can't stand anything east of Gibraltar because he says they're so honest and cruel about it. Where'd you go?
Have you finished that dreadful business? We can hardly breathe.
Mr. Hammer, you have been most hospitable. But I have to impose even further. As a host to the conference, I feel moved to give a grand ball of peace and friendship, which will also celebrate the birth of the atomic age. May I hold it here?
In my greenhouse?
Preferably in your home.
The band will now play I Got a Right to Sing the Blues, which is a quick step.
No, man! It's a slow, but fast. Slow, slow. Quick, quick, slow, 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 quick, quick, slow, yeah, yeah.
Rusty, may I have this dance?
The form round here, comrade, is lend us your body for a struggle.
Lend us your body for a struggle.
All right.
Rusty is an odd name for such a beautiful young woman.
That's me dad's fault, like most things.
He had me christened Rouillet after a nurse he met, which is French for rusty. Don't ask me why.
Why?
He said she'd saved his life after he'd been gassed in the trenches.
Rusty doesn't suit you. You should change your name.
Not before you change the world.
I was saved from drowning in 1917 by a Havildar major of Indian troops. That's the same as our sergeant major.
Perhaps you'd better sit down.
Down the shores of your Black Sea. I want to take Rusty there. Take my daughter to show her the place where someone thought I was worth saving.
Your daughter is happy dancing with all our young officers.
The one she's dancing with now isn't one of your officers.
I was sitting there doing a quick sketch of this camel, sweetheart, when as luck would have it, he does a big load right on top of a landmine we just laid. I got knocked over by the blast, and the camel landed on me with all its 4 feet blown off. Slow, slow, quick, quick, slow.
I got your message.
I was crushed, I couldn't shout for help. Thinking it was a general attack, our column moved off and left me behind.
And these Arabs came along on the way to market.
That's right.
Kind Arabs.
Kind as you like. And they put me in a car.
Took you to an oasis.
Then it was all slow, slow, quick, quick, slow. Until I got you in my arms again.
Oh, Jack. You're such a wonderful dancer.
My daughter doesn't have any idea what I've been through. And she chooses to forget my good points. You know women, the sooner they can forget a man's decent actions, the more they like. Where is he? He's here somewhere eavesdropping. That spying little bastard never gives me a moment's peace.
Why is he always watching you?
Doesn't want to miss it if I suddenly drop dead.
Many people would like to see the end of Stalin. So like you, I am no stranger to reasonable paranoia. Whenever I get into a state about it, this is what I do. Sit quietly to clear and settle the mind. Rub oil of oregano behind the ears and do deep breathing. Read some poetry, Pushkin, you know the one? I have put up a monument to myself, not built by human hand. Then Shakespeare, probably. I carry a book of his sonnets everywhere. Not mine own fears, nor the prophetic soul of the wide world dreaming of things to come can yet the lease of my true love control. After that, think about the wonders of nature for a while. The flowers, the birds, shapes of clouds. Then draw up the list.
What list?
The list of those to be liquidated.
I can't put him on that. He's my grandson.
So?
What a clean and orderly home you have, Mr. Hammer. I admire the polish on your walnut veneer sideboard and the little flying elephant.
What's happened to you?
After I was captured by Soviet troops in Berlin, Stalin gave orders that my mustache was to be shaved off and sent to him in a matchbox. When I was taken to Moscow and brought before him in chains, he was cleaning his teeth with a toothbrush whose bristles I recognized.
The word was told you'd blown your brains out, been doused in petrol and set on fire with either, you know.
My wife of 1 hour. How romantic, eh? That was a story Comrade Stalin put out so that I could enjoy my retirement incognito. You'd be surprised the number of times your name crops up in our conversations. May I sit down?
My personal chair, but you can have it.
Thank you. Bullet holes even here. Can you remember where you were on the night of the 13th of October, 1918?
Yes. Where were you? Adolf's always talking about you and this crucial moment in his life.
Me? What for?
Try to remember where you were, exactly.
I was in the line.
But where? Put your finger on it for us.
And just outside a place called Wervik, near Wipers.
Wipers, to the uninitiated, Ypres. Would have been an old cloth-making town.
And what were you doing in the line at Wervik near Vipers on that day?
Well, I can't think with all that row going on. It's my wife. Once she gets going...
I'll close the door.
Go on, Mr. Hammer, tell us. Try to remember.
I was lobbing it over.
And what was it you were lobbing over, comrade?
Ranging. Nature of sheltering, gas. Range 1500. One round, fire!
You see, you change the shape of the future with that single shot. That day, I was in those trenches opposite, scribbling disorganized thoughts in my notebook.
The shell you fired made me go blind.
That very shell. Well, well.
I was sent to hospital in Pomerania. There I had time to sit in darkness and work out my ideas on how to make the world a better place.
So it was an Englishman who helped to get started? Oh, no. No, no, I can't have that. Damn it, I won't have that. Liverpudlians aren't really Englishmen at all.
Without Mr. Hammer, I would have remained no one.
What a burden for you to carry, Mr. Hammer. I thank God it's not on my shoulders.
That's not what happened. It's all the wind change. Blew the gas back right in my face. Why do you think I've only got half a stomach?
Here is a man who breathes through his anus.
I'm burnt, burnt, I have a dust shirt.
Bravo, bravo.
What's Hitler doing in my house?
Madam, I was invited.
Not by me, you wimp. Get out!
Herr Hammer, your husband.
That's his chair. No one's allowed to sit in his chair but him.
I beg your pardon. The chair is vacated.
I'm the house proud's birth wife who hung herself with the dishcloth, so you'll have to go.
Madam, I cannot follow you.
I'm the woman who knows the colour of the Red Sea and how the milk got in the coconut.
I'm going.
Before you do, grant me a favour. Look up my arse and see if my hat's on straight. Take that at a pound a week.
If my grandfather's medical records were as complete as I could make them, they'd show that Adolf Hitler, the scourge of God, Europe, the world and the imagination, actually met his death at the hands of my grandmother, who, while impersonating an upper class down and out, drew a blade from the swordstick prop of her act and ran the tyrant through the throat. Blood shot from his mouth, flew across the room and went splat against the wall.
I can't be that for distance. Don't you come near me with that stick.
What are you yelling about?
The ball's over. Get them out of here.
Thank you. There's no one here except you and me.
Come out.
Sit down and be quiet. What's he done now?
You dirty bitch. I saw you giving the committee to half the Red Army. Have you no shame?
Oh, God, his eyes have gone funny. They're like stones. This was always coming. No one can drink so much and stay safe. See what you've done to yourself. You stupid, self-destructive son. Rusty, get to the phone box. Call the doctor now, quick.
Yes, Mum.
Tell him your dad's seeing things.
I hope to Christ they're not burying Hitler in my green
house. Hurry up. Come out from under the table, son. Don't be afraid. Come on. Your granddad's not very well.
I'll take a Slipney Joey out of his place and take your mum to the telephone box. Look after her.
I have to get someone I left under the table, Gran.
Hurry up, then. Your mum's waiting.
Once through the door, take over the place. That's the kind of people they are.
Anything you say. Oh, thank God. Louis, anybody listen? You've taken everything else, but please don't take his mind. Not his mind.
I don't want them hanging around anymore. Tell them to make themselves scarce. Go back to where they're slithering from. They're never to come here again.
Of course, of course. Just you sit back.
Why am I telling you to do this kind of job? It's a man's work.
With demonic energy, he suddenly gets up, kicks the French doors open, and rushes down the garden to his greenhouse, picks up a spade he inherited from his grave digger father, and proceeds to destroy all he's held sacred since his war. The temple of his pain. The temple of 115 panes of glass.
Oh, how was that in all? All I did was what I was told. Never believe what you heard of the news.
Ah, such music. It takes me back to Kristallnacht today.
I was number 115 on the agenda. 115 was the number of days between the liberation of Belsen and the dropping of the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. 115 days, which imagination must defeat or we're lost. This Herculean task of out-imagining the truth was shouldered single-handedly by my grandfather. Although the psychiatrist in the hospital where he was sent did not know it, their thin, waxen patient, so shaken from within, so wan with care, was heroically outdreaming the evils of the century for everyone's sake.
The mother!
Awestruck by the strength of his mighty, undiminishing hallucinations, and panicked by his swift descent into epileptic grand mal seizures, the medical men decided that my grandfather's delirium tremens must have a physical cause that had been made worse by his colossal intake of alcohol. He was wheeled down to the operating theatre and a mask put over his face.
Give me more.
Give me more.
The man's capacity for anesthetics is astonishing. He's still not got under. Increase the flow, nurse.
When they finally knocked him out under a cloudbank of ether and opened him up, the surgeon's scalpel went into the half of a stomach that wasn't there, and a ring that wasn't there was found. A lucky ring. An anti-existential sign, a part of some god's blind design, that mankind and my granddad might survive.
Hello, Dad. Any better today?
Ah, same as every other day. What'd you bring him for?
He has to come.
He's no place for a chap. Don't let him tread on those tubes.
He's been asking why you broke up the greenhouse.
It was mine to break.
Mum says it might have been because of me. I hope it wasn't.
Don't let him get under the bed. He'll tie knots in me life supply.
Mum says it might help you get better if I explain how I feel. Jack can't be dead till he's dead in my heart, that's all.
So you say.
I don't care about the facts. Do you know that Mum still has a note on a fag packet you sent her when you got back to your regiment after being missing in France? No one knew where you were. For a couple of weeks, you were dead to everyone except her.
A couple of weeks isn't a couple of years. Get your foot off, you little bugger.
My grandfather was the only man I had to model myself on in early life. With him as an example, it's strange I should drink at all, but I do. And I've drunk to find visions like his, terrible ones that go with the times. The worst I've ever had was of myself one-eyed and twice life-size, standing behind an open door and glaring over the top like Cyclops. Shook me. But I carried on, like him, pouring a drink to get over it.
You learn nothing, you over-educated gobshite.
The 115 days. 1 plus 1 plus 5, which equals 7. That is the number of days it takes to make or unmake a world.
My arse and you for a top hat and me legs for streamers.
In hospital, he was supposed to be drying out. The cronies from the docks smuggled in bottles of drink when they visited. So the hallucinations continued, their violence unabated. He lost even more weight, dropping to 6 stone. Food was now little more than a nauseous memory. Then, with blackouts punctuating each day, he was sent the father and mother of all nightmares. His script penned by the arch-fiend himself.
Someone to see you, Mr. Hammer.
Had to come. The election result has got me down. Did you vote for me?
I'm a superintendent of warehouses, aren't I?
And what's got into them? I've been betrayed. Everything I've done for this country...
They don't know they're born.
What does a chap have to do?
You know best, boss, but think on this. In our house, I got voted out years ago. But somehow, I'm still running the show.
Iron curtain's coming down, like I said it would. Joe making a real nuisance of himself. Americans getting very arrogant, money mad. Our only hope's a united Europe, but... I decided to leave that to other men. Give up. Rest on my laurels. I've done enough. You never know. Someone as good as me might come along.
Don't give up, Mr. Churchill. We need you. The working class conservatives aren't dead, only sleeping.
Well, your analysis is spot on, Mr. Hammer.
What you gotta do is repair the slums and get them back on their feet again. They're a hotbed of support for strong government. The less they have, the more they like it. Did you bring your hip flask?
Have we grabbed?
Can you empty the contents down that tube without spilling any?
Steady as you do.
Oh, this is easier than drinking. My arm doesn't get tired. You see, sir, what's happening now is everyone's for change, like Hitler was. They don't understand. It's his disease they've got. Before you build, you have to destroy, they say. And when they've wrecked everything good they had, they'll want it back. And that's the way they'll feel about you. Mark my words, boss.
Ever thought of politics as a career? When you're better, pop down, look me up. And when you knock at the door, bring me the obedience of the poor.
Eventually, my grandfather was discharged and sent home. Settling into his pockmarked chair, he spat in the fire and said,
"Well, I had to be up at Sparrowfart and back to work tomorrow, thank God."
"What do you want in your sandwiches? And don't say nothing."
"Corn dog'll do. Bags likes it."
It wasn't long before he started drinking again. This time my grandmother swallowed her pride and went down on her bended knees, begging him to stop. He agreed to try. Again and again and again. He went back to it, of course. And in due time, aided and abetted by malaria, gas, caps and full strength, and democracy, it killed him.
"Son, I want you to take me to the polling station to vote for Mr. Churchill. Just hold my hand. Eyes aren't so good these days. They don't go so fast. Only got two speeds these days. Dead slow and stop."
It was my brother who led him, not me. By then he was the age I had been at the end of the war, and I was away at boarding school on a charity scholarship, having become a problem at home because I couldn't live in the same house as my grandfather anymore.
"God knows what they're doing to your brother down at that school. Your mother says his housemaster's an old artillery officer with a wooden leg. I'll give him what for. Forward the guns, yeah."
"I'm going to go to that school, Grandad."
"Yeah, you're better off staying here with me, sunshine. Go to the grammar school and I'll fix you up with a good job. I'd just like to be a pox doctor's clerk.
I don't want to be like my brother."
"And you'll end up in jail."
Long after my mother, Rusty, had come to terms with my father's death, my brother retained his magical meaning. The women in the street always made a fuss of him and said, "Oh, God, isn't he lovely? God bless him." Some even called him Jack, behind his back. Now, as he walked up the pavement with our grandfather, a housewife opposite, who was cleaning her windows, waved and called out,
"Hello there, son. Taking him for a walk, are you?"
"What do you think I am, missus? A flaming poodle?" "Oh!"
My brother's attention had been distracted. He led my grandfather into a deep hole council workmen had dug and left unguarded. But he didn't die straight away. His broken arm meant he was off work for months, the last straw for the warehouse company. He was retired early. So he sued the council for loss of earnings and won.
What's up, Mum?
They awarded him £1,500 compensation.
£1,500? Oh, God, that's terrible.
Within 6 months, he drunk the lot and was dead, having fallen downstairs after an all-day session celebrating Churchill's comeback. I'd had to go to the Black Lion and bring him home in his own wheelbarrow. We got him upstairs and into bed, but then, like the man with one leg in the grave, he jumped out again.
"Look out! I'm coming down! Make way!"
"Oh, oh God! What's happened now?"
"Someone moved the universe. Ah."
He left his body to medical science, thinking it might have curiosity value, but they said no thanks. There was no money for a stone, so the gravedigger's son lies under an unmarked hump of grass and weeds. After his death, Burlington Bertie became redundant. And when my grandmother wrote to me, always with a mouse drawn beside her signature, the bristling, mysterious language of old Anglo-Irish Liverpool was not there anymore. A heart attack brought on by carrying a full dolly tub of water finally laid her low, and her 15 stone shrank to 8. For her, not a fighting weight.
"You asked if there was anything you could ever do for me, son."
"Yes, Gran."
"I know why you're like you are. Sometime, when you've got a week to spare, I'd like you to take your mother out to Africa to see your father's grave."
"If she agrees, it shall be done."
"She will one day. But you'll have to be patient."
My grandmother died after she'd shared a quiet joint widowhood with my mother for 13 years, who always prevaricated on the visit to my father's grave. Another 15 years had to pass before she was close enough to death herself fully to face the fact of his. When we went, I took 2 sons of my own to counteract the power of the absence. But you sit down and I'll find it.
Could take hours.
I'll just keep walking up and down the rows.
Those Arabs keep it very nice.
When I found him in his shining white stone, which read 2660683 1 SJT, then his name, then 1st of February 1943, age 26, Coldstream Guards, followed by a magically ambiguous quote from somewhere, chosen by an anonymous hand, "God proved him and found him worthy of himself. The sky fused with the earth and rolled me up in a wonderful fire." It didn't matter that nothing may have been in the coffin except rocks. It may even have been a matchbox down there. But I knew it as the one place sacred to him I could touch and receive the understanding of death. I put my hand out and felt the sun-warmed stone. Tears sprang, but they were of liberation and gladness. Now I was in a real land, under a real sun, with real cemetery workers sitting under a real hedge, smoking real cigarettes, and waiting for a real tip. I went to the bench where I'd left my mother and brought her to the spot.
Here. Would you like to be left alone?
Son, you watch him be like a hawk.
You all right?
He's not under there. Inside, I'm just a block of ice.
Surely you must feel something. Try.
But that was all she'd say. The earth itself had failed to convince her. We drove back to the coast, a long car journey through hills with ruins of Roman cities, ports deep in brilliant spring flowers. She seemed strangely happy.
Have you got anything to say to me?
What kind of a question is that?
Just wondered.
I always knew he wasn't out here.
He was to me.
You were always one for imagining things. Get that off your grandfather.
Flattened, I said no more. She was happy because she'd kept the faith. She'd been right all along. He was yet to be found. Before she died a few months later, having been ill with chronic bronchitis, all that smoking, and no longer able to look after herself, my mother came to live near me in London. It was Christmas Eve. Her furniture was still in Liverpool and her flat wasn't quite ready. That morning, I found her standing in the living room, struggling to say the Lord's Prayer, and I knew that she was getting ready. By evening, she was in the Whittington Hospital. I sat by the bedside, watching the monitor of her heartbeat, listening to the carolers in the corridors of that vast Victorian heap of stone. Suddenly, the bright spot on the monitor leapt. She sat up and tried to run down the ward. Not away from death, but towards someone. Then she fell back and died, her mouth falling open with amazement that the bloody war could be over for her at last.
What's the matter with you, boy? Don't you know I got a right to sing the blues? Listen at this. Look out! 1, 2...
When my mother had gone, I had the last word on my father's whereabouts, however. I took her ashes out to Tunisia in a brown paper bag strapped up with sellotape. My brother went with me. At the customs barrier, we decided to go into the Red Channel, fearing that if our cases were spot-searched in the green, the bag would be discovered and they suspect it contained illicit substances. Then we'd have to open it, with all that that entailed. A young, rather fierce official took the bag and scrutinized it.
Qu'est-ce que vous avez là-dedans?
Les cendres de nos mères.
Notre mère. English?
Oui.
Why bring her here?
Portons cet sac. À la sépulcre.
I speak your language, don't I?
We're taking her, them, to where her father's buried in the mountains. He was killed in the war.
Ah, the war. Your war.
Yes. Our war. He gave us a hard, bitter look. For a moment I thought he was going to insist we open the brown paper bag. If we did, and they took a sample of those ashes to test, what would show up? What sparkling crystals of pure grief? What structures of bright disbelief? But the customs man merely shook his head, patted the brown paper bag, put it back into our hands, and waved us through, saying,
"Go in peace."
So we did.
In Under the Table by David Pownall, the storyteller was David Calder, and Seth was Kenneth Cranham. May was Maureen O'Brien, Rusty, Becky Hindley, Churchill, Robert Lang, Stalin, Andrew Sachs, Roosevelt, David Healy, and Hitler, Jonathan Keeble. Rouillet was Natasha Pine, Jack, Oliver Senton, Bags, Andrew Branch, Mr. Hunt, Peter Yap, and Trevor, David Antrobus. The music was composed by Neil Brand and performed by Sarah Homer. Under the Table was directed by Owen O'Callaghan.